This Week in Palestine.
Hello, listeners. My name is Salma Abu Ayash, and today is Sunday, March 7th, 2011. Edward Said. His influence on every intellectual and activist interested in the Arab world and Israel-Palestine impasse is tremendous. He is recognized as the author of the theory of Orientalism, therefore influencing all work, anthropological, philosophical, historical, religious, linguistic, cinematic, you name it, having to do with the relationship between the so-called East and West. He was the most eloquent and articulate spokesperson on behalf of the Palestinians. He never wavered, and his views and positions have proven to be ultimately the most visionary of all our thinkers. His impact as we proceed forward in the struggle of liberation for Palestine is huge, and his analysis and perceptions are terribly missed, especially today in light of all the changes happening in the Arab world, and with the failure of the Oslo process and the scandals of the Palestine Papers. In light of this, I would like to focus on Edward Said in the next few months. As a reminder to our listeners, This Week in Palestine is produced by five of us to work together, giving us a rotation of once every 4 weeks. In other words, the next installment on Edward Said will air in 4 weeks from now. And I will be interviewing at that time Adel Iskandar with his new book, A Legacy of Emancipation and Representation. It's a book on Edward Said. As for today, we are borrowing a wonderful program from Alternative Radio. It's a talk by Nubar Havaspian, and Alternative Radio's host and director, David Barsamian, will introduce the show for us. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
It's Nubar Havaspian, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Nubar Havaspian on Edward Said, public intellectual. From Rousseau to Gramsci to Bertrand Russell and Noam Chomsky, intellectuals play vital roles in society. Resisting the lure of power, intellectuals question the status quo and conventional thinking. Choices are made, of course. Play ball with the establishment, and you'll be applauded and honored. Stand in opposition, and you risk ostracism and opprobrium. It's a lot easier for some intellectuals to collaborate and support empire by providing sophomoric rationales for imperial policies. Edward Said was not one of those. He felt strongly that intellectuals, because of their privileged position, had a special responsibility to speak out against injustice, challenge power, confront hegemonic thinking, and provide alternatives. One of the extraordinary figures of this era, Edward Said was born in Jerusalem, Palestine in 1935. An internationally renowned Columbia University professor, he practically invented the field of post-colonial studies. His great works, Orientalism and Culture and Imperialism, have been translated into many languages and are widely used in colleges and universities. The New York Times called him one of the most influential literary and cultural critics in the world. As one of the few advocates for Palestinian rights in the United States, he was the target of vilification and death threats. He was a trenchant critic, not just of U.S. policies, but also of Arafat, the corrupt coterie around him, the Palestinian Authority, Hamas, and the despotic Arab regimes. Edward Said died in New York on September 25, 2003. To talk about Edward Said is someone who knew him well, Nubar Havaspian. Nubar Havaspian, born in Egypt, attended the American University of Beirut. He received his Ph.D. from the City University of New York. He's professor of political science and international relations at Chapman University. He's the author of The War on Lebanon and Palestinian State Formation. Nubar Havaspian spoke at Harvard in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
This is a difficult topic for me because it's a very personal topic. I'm in the process of constructing a book on the politics of a public intellectual. I'm tempted to titled it Edward Said, The Conscious Pariah, The Politics of a Public Intellectual. Earlier this year, I wrote a new intro to a series of interviews that David Barsamian, and by the way, he's the one who's recording me here in absentia. This way he will give me thousands of people to listen to my talk later on his radio network. So I wrote this introduction to The Pen and the Sword, and I found myself sandwiched between the late Iqbal Ahmad, who had written the original introduction, and Edward Said. Very humbling experience. Let me engage in some personal dimensions as well as political, and they're intermeshed. Iqbal, when he wrote this introduction in 1984, he passed away in 1999. Iqbal's friends and family celebrated his life at a memorial service held in New York. Two of Iqbal's dear friends and co-conspirators for justice, Edward Said and the late Ibrahim Abulghod, spoke eloquently about his legacy. 2 years later, Ibrahim Abulghod passed away in Ramallah. Edward missed his friends, and he dedicated two of his most important books to his friends. Orientalism is dedicated to Janet Abulghod and Ibrahim Abulghod, and Culture and Imperialism, very much influenced by Iqbal and Iqbal's understanding of national liberation movements. He dedicated that work. Edward notes that in the final years of both of their lives, both Iqbal and Ibrahim returned to their countries of origin, Pakistan and Palestine. Edward, and he quickly adds, but they didn't actually go back home. Here, Edward echoes a message of his memoir, Out of Place. In intellectual terms, he liked to think of himself as his ideas being unhoused. And I'll get to that in a moment. Edward wrote, I'll be going back and forth between Edward and Said. I give myself the luxury of Edward since he was a personal friend. He paid tribute to his friends. He describes Iqbal's life as an epic and poetic one, full of wanderings, border crossings, and an almost instinctive attraction to liberation movements, movements of the oppressed and the persecuted. Further in the piece he wrote on Iqbal as a eulogy, he notes that Iqbal managed to preserve his native Muslim tradition without succumbing either to frozen exclusivism or to the jealousy that has gone often with it. Humanity and genuine secularism in this blood-drenched old century of ours had no finer champion. In an essay titled My Guru, published in the London Review of Books, Edward remembers his departed friend Ibrahim. He met Ibrahim in 1954, and it was Ibrahim who introduced him to Iqbal in 1970, the other comrade in arms, whose untimely death left him very diminished. Edward credits Ibrahim Abulghod with having introduced him to the subject of Palestine, even though he was Palestinian. It was Ibrahim who in 1974 introduced him to Shafi al-Hut, who always came as part of the delegation of the PLO to the United Nations General Assembly. And also, through him, he met the poet, the late poet, Mahmoud Darwish. Ibrahim lived in Beirut during the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982. Edward notes that Beirut was perhaps the most important experience for Ibrahim than any other or after. This experience taught him that one can always press on, even though failure looms. That was the real Ibrahim, the man who understood that the only thing is to press on. He's as if talking to the Palestinians today. The only thing left is to press on. Remaining optimistic and loyal to one's comrades and making most of one's sense of humor, however macabre that might have been. At 2-year intervals, Iqbal Ibrahim died, and Edward followed suit 2 years later in 03. Over 6 years, we lost rare human beings, rare public political intellectuals. Edward was eulogized in his turn by friends, family members, former students, admirers, and even some enemies. Christopher Hitchens, one of them, who was a friend and co-authored Blaming the Victims with Edward before he decided to become a neocon. Edward's funeral was almost a stately affair. It filled the pews of the Riverside Church in New York City, the city that was home away from home. One of the most moving moments in the funeral was a musical tribute performed by Edward's friend and collaborator in the founding of the West Eastern Divan Orchestra, Daniel Barenboim. He played J.S. Bach's Prelude in E flat and Part One of the Well-Tempered Clavier, with tears rolling down his face, but in silence. This is perhaps the first time that Maestro Barenboim's performance was met with appropriate silence and not applause. None of these men belonged to the past alone. These men, as Edward put it, stood for energy, mobility, and risk. He might have been writing about himself as well. Since his death, the situation in Palestine has gone from bad to worse. That is an understatement. The Palestine movement has imploded, and Israel continues to unleash its wrath against the Palestinians, as evidenced by Gaza and other occasions. Such conditions can lead to despair. But in My Guru, the piece on Ibrahim, Edward suggests an alternative mode. In the unfolding story of Palestine, Ibrahim, I believe, will remain a model of what it is to have been dedicated to an idea, not as something to bow down to, but to live and to re-examine constantly. He asks us not to copy what Ibrahim and obviously others had done, but to live their experience anew, to enable the possibility of critical reflection and revision in the present and future. His mind was constantly mobile. Said was recognized as one of the leading cultural critics of his time, perhaps till today. He contributed to focal debates in various social scientific disciplines, including his own field of comparative literature. Said's Orientalism and his subsequent books helped create a new field of study, post-colonial studies, but he was quick to disown the field as having gone in a direction that he did not recognize himself. Said remained committed to liberating humanism. Therefore, in his dual role as prolific scholar-intellectual and as a public intellectual, Said insisted that boundaries and barriers must be transgressed. Said believed that intellectuals in modern society should speak truth to power. Like Julien Benda in his Trahison Déclare, Said believes that the intellectual must insist on truth and justice and give, as Benda put it, utterance not to mere fashion and passing fads, but to real ideas and values, which cannot be articulated from inside a position of power. Said's theoretical work in his literary and musical writings clearly are influenced by another set of people, Vico, Auerbach, Adorno, Foucault, Raymond Williams, Gramsci, to cite only a few. Like his mentors, he is an exile, not simply expressed in terms of a forlorn life, but an exile whose ideas must remain necessarily unhoused. As he notes in Reflections on Exile, a collection of essays, it is a condition that jealously insists on his or her right to refuse to belong. Or, as Adorno says with grave irony, it is part of morality not to be at home in one's home. In other words, Said is arguing for a borderless homeland, which meant nothing less than a democratic and cosmopolitan polity, free of racial and national strife, and liberated from humanly wasteful exploitation. Briefly, then, the goal of Said's thought is convergence rather than conflict, fraternity rather than frontiers, democracy rather than discord, in short, a just and reconciled international homeland rather than divisive separatism or lawless hegemony of powerful states. I'll dwell another 2-3 minutes on this part of it to then show how his humanism is connected to his view of Palestine. In his literary music criticism, Said insisted on the worldliness of texts. He notes very clearly that Vicot had asserted that the mind fashions its own world. In secular criticism, the world, the text, and the critic, and culture and imperialism, Said argues that the role of criticism is to interrogate theoretical systems through a knowledge of history, recognition of the importance of social circumstances, that is, worldliness, an analytical capacity for making distinctions. These, he says, trouble the quasi-religious authority of being comfortably at home amongst one people, supported by known powers and acceptable values, protected against the outside world. Much of Said's writing, particularly after Orientalism, uses the form of the essay. It's discursive, informal, alert to the requirements of particular problems, and mindful of thought's obligations to its material. Said defends the essay as his adopted form, borrowed from Adorno's Essay as Form, published in 1958. He observes, if I am to be taken seriously as saying that secular criticism deals with local and worldly situations, and that it is constitutively opposed to the production of massive hermetic systems, then it must follow that the essay, a comparatively short, investigative, rather than skeptical form, is the principal way to write criticism. Said characterized his book, The Question of Palestine, a political essay, which I will discuss quite shortly. Said's trilogy, and indeed he saw them as a trilogy, Orientalism, published in 78, The Question of Palestine, 1979, and Covering Islam in 1981, are not limited to Foucault's claim that knowledge is inherently bound up with the exercise of power. More importantly, Said claims that we must pay close attention to how knowledge of the rest of the world is inherently connected to the destruction heaped on the world, that is, wars, displacements, poverty, migrations. In this context, the intellectual, by necessity, must be oppositional. In my book, I've come up with 3 categories of intellectuals, and they are not scientific categories. I'll put the oppositional intellectual versus the embedded intellectual. You can imagine who might be in that category, and the native informant. People like Ajami and Makiya, for example, would fall in that category. So it is a critique that is not self-indulgent, and it is informed by cherished universal ideals and standards, justice, compassion, freedom, equality, love. This type of critique is both eccentric and transgressive, and one that is based on awareness of the world and ourselves. Said has been criticized for either borrowing too much from Foucault or for distancing himself from Foucault. Like Foucault and Raymond Williams, Said's interrogation of the modernist project demonstrates how it resulted in oppression and exploitation. This is why these critics were and are politically influential. I've been discussing this matter with my friend and colleague at the University of Pennsylvania, Ann Norton, and in an email she told me, I vividly remember the feeling I had when reading each of these, Foucault, Williams, and Said, that not only were they brilliant, but they also freed me from the intellectual and political despair by showing how these seemingly intractable and invisible forces of oppression could be fought. So the notion of resistance is crucial in Said's work, whether it is in his literary and or political. To resist, then, the subaltern must engage in self-representation or counter-representation, which is the act of resistance, at least the initial act of resistance. On this subject, Saeed is informed mostly by his friend Iqbal Ahmad and others from the historical perspective, including César, Cabral, C.L.R. James, Tagore, and Walter Rodney, to name only a few. The more he immersed himself in the literature on liberation and resistance, the more he seems to have distanced himself from Foucault. He found Foucault on this score too elusive, apolitical, and noncommittal. With reference to the Chomsky-Foucault debate, Saeed notes that Foucault lacked a sense of active commitment and that he did not believe in positive truths, ideas, or ideals. A point also Chomsky makes about that in multiple places. Foucault's apparent silence on resistance, as contrasted with great writers like E.P. Thompson in his Making of the English Working Class, or the pioneering work of César, Discours sur le colonialisme. Together, these approaches, according to Saeed, create new space to be filled by people who can speak for themselves at last. The subaltern indeed speaks and resists. Therefore, in Saeed's worldliness, the subject can speak. Hence, subjects, Palestinians, who are produced within a discourse of domination, can revert to the power of self-representation to counter the discourse of domination. In his traveling theory, Saeed concludes, in human history, there is always something beyond the reach of dominating systems. In other words, there is no total system, no matter how deeply they saturate society. And this is obviously what makes change possible, limits power in Foucault's sense, and hobbles the theory of power. This is what I'm arguing is precisely what Saeed set out to accomplish to both his literary work and his cultural criticism, and indeed his political writings. Edward, in this context, did not, for example, so much defend Islam or the Arabs as attack the reified notions of Orient and Occident. His primary concern was to delineate the sources of Western knowledge about non-Western societies. Like a mirror, he suggested, Orientalism reflects Western power and its imperial appetite. To rescue the production of knowledge from colonial and imperial constraints, Edward used a humanistic critique that is, as he put it, centered on the agency of human individuality and subjective intuition rather than on received ideas and approved authority. For Edward, then, the real task of the writer, the intellectual, the public critic, is to advance human freedom and knowledge. At the celebration of the 25th anniversary of the publication of Orientalism, Gyan Prakash dubbed his colleague, Princeton colleague Bernard Lewis, the embedded intellectual, one who serves power. Okay, so now you know, have a member of that club. In contrast, Edward was the quintessential oppositional intellectual. His conception of the intellectual both echoes and expands on Gramsci's notion of the organic intellectual. In Representations of the Intellectual, he implores native intellectuals to resist the temptation to narcotize the critical sense or reduce its imperatives. He was very much against nativism and narrow nationalism. In the Deutscher sense, he was the non-national national, the non-Palestinian-Palestinian, in as much as I am the non-Armenian-Armenian, right? Which are always to go beyond survival to questions of political liberation, to critiques of the leadership, to presenting alternatives that are too often marginalized or pushed aside as irrelevant to the main battle at hand. In his late style, this is precisely what he does with the Palestinian leadership. Saeed calls upon the modern intellectual to resist the lures of power and specialization. The independent intellectual must universalize and give greater scope to the crisis confronting any nation at any given time by associating that experience with the suffering of others, not to render suffering unique, but to draw the universal lesson of that suffering. It is precisely these concerns that Saeed invokes to probe issues pertaining to Palestine and the Middle East. It's here that I choose to engage now Saeed, and particularly his book, The Question of Palestine, because I think it has been superficially read, misread, misunderstood. Edwards' engagement with the idea of Palestine and its national movement, the PLO, before the PA, took on various forms, multiple functions, solidarity, representation, advocacy, and critique. The latter category is both a critique to improve and a critique to differ with what is being articulated. In a recent essay, Avi Schleim delineates four main phases of Saeed's thinking and writing on the question of Palestine. He suggests that first Saeed favored a one-state, binational state for Jews and Arabs in historic Palestine, which he sees as explicitly adumbrated in the question of Palestine. Then, Schleim suggests, he endorsed and advocated a two-state solution, particularly in connection with the 1988 convening of the Palestine National Council meeting in Algiers, which produced the declaration of statehood. You know, Palestinian state has been declared twice, hasn't taken hold yet. Maybe the third one will count, all right? With the signing of the Oslo Accords, he critiqued the two-state idea, which is implicit in the agreement. And lastly, and toward the end of his life, he reverted to a one-state solution. Schleim adds, his thinking had come full circle. Let me suggest that Avi Schleim's periodization, though useful, is somewhat flawed and a bit mechanistic. It is based on an uncritical reading of Saeed's major work on the subject, namely The Question of Palestine, published in 1979. A more careful reading of the book and Saeed's other numerous writings on the subject reveal a more nuanced and, dare I say, contrapuntal view. Saeed actually supports and approves of several positions simultaneously in the question of Palestine. He never presented himself as a political strategist. Before proceeding with this matter, let me note that the central value of the book when it appeared is its capacity to construct a Palestinian narrative of representation to a Western audience. And second, he develops a political, cultural, and ideological critique of Zionism. I assign this second chapter, Zionism Viewed from the Standpoint of Its Victims, and juxtapose it with the 90-page intro to the Zionist idea by Arthur Hertzberg, two quality pieces of writing on the same subject matter to invite students to see, well, what's wrong with this picture. Saeed supports a democratic secular state, an idea advanced by major organizations of the PLO, Fatah, the PFLP, and the Democratic Front. Since 1974, when Saeed first affiliated and identified with the PLO and its leadership, he was aware and supportive of efforts to develop a more coherent political program. In the question of Palestine, he views favorably the 11-point program of the 1974 Palestine National Council meeting and also the 1977 PNC, which ultimately advocated the idea of setting up some form of Palestinian national authority on any part of the land from which Israel withdraws and or evacuates from, the precursor to the two-state solution idea. Saeed, in the question of Palestine, points out that Arafat was in fact committing the Palestinian national community to the idea of a two-state solution. And I quote, and with the idea, an implicit recognition of Israel as a neighbor.
You're listening to Nubar Hovsepian, Edward Saeed, public intellectual. This is Alternative Radio. You can order copies of this program and the books, The Pen and the Sword and Culture and Resistance, by calling our toll-free number 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order online on our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.
Saeed thirdly insists that Palestine was not a typical colonial situation. He writes, it is entirely different. We are not dealing with the Jews. We are dealing with the Jews and the Holocaust, not the pieds noirs in Algeria. The idea of the destruction of that society struck me as impermissible. Later on, he likened the Palestinian predicament as one of being the victims of the victims. It's a very complex moral political view to hold. In this connection, Saeed was adamant in all of his writings from the question of Palestine on in denouncing all forms of racism, anti-Semitism, and Holocaust denial through his books and numerous articles, many of which were published in various newspapers in Arabic. Saeed recognized that the conflict is between two peoples and suggested that a vision of the future accommodating both peoples with authentic claims to Palestine was a central point of departure. From this, he notes that two things are certain. The Jews of Israel will remain. The Palestinians will also remain. He adds, nothing that I have said in this book, Question of Palestine, must be understood except as an acknowledgement of Palestinian and of Jewish history, in fierce conflict with each other for periods of time, but fundamentally reconcilable if both peoples make the attempt to see each other within a common historical perspective. In the same year as the publication of the Question of Palestine, Saeed concluded that armed struggle, espoused by the PLO since 1969, should no longer serve as the principal program for Palestinians. In fact, armed struggle is never a program for a student of national liberation movements. In an interview with Mark Brzozinski, published in April of 1979, Saeed claims that many Palestinians are quite confused about their political strategy. He asks, and let me quote him, are we a national independence movement or a national liberation movement? In a certain way, we're claiming we are both. We're at a juncture where we have to make a decision. The period of indecision between one alternative and the other is pretty much at an end, and I would rather it is taken by us than in some sense imposed on us. Edward, I will comment on this point a bit further. Now, Edward was quite influenced in his ideas in this juncture by his late friend Iqbal Ahmad. In a trip he arranged for Iqbal and others to meet the PLO leadership in Beirut, Edward recounts Iqbal's proposals to Arafat. This is early on. Here are some of the ideas. He suggested that they organize a mass peaceful march from Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, with a simple slogan, we want to go home. Two, he advocated the need for peaceful means and disciplined organization. It's not that he was a pacifist, but he understood the power of force and sometimes the misuse of force in particular historical circumstances. Iqbal offered a merciless critique of the cult of the gun and the misuse of the slogan of armed struggle. Iqbal always insisted that militant struggle is not synonymous with armed struggle. He also warned of the debilitating militarization of Palestinian thinking and organization long before the second intifada of the year 2000, which also the militarization of thinking takes place. He implored the leadership to organize a sustained campaign for Palestinian human rights in the U.S. 10 years later, Iqbal gave the same proposals after 82 in Tunis. Obviously, they didn't resonate in the 70s, and they did not resonate with the leadership in the 80s. In effect, what I'm arguing is that the question of Palestine should, in fact, be read as an essay of reconciliation. And indeed, the title of the review that Iqbal wrote in The Nation magazine was titled An Essay in Reconciliation. He did not deny Jewish claims to Palestine. Rather, he would say that their claims always entail Palestinian dispossession. Because he remained a proud and apologetic Palestinian, ardent Zionists and neoconservatives launch attacks, vindictive attacks against him. But their attacks fail to offer the slightest hint of an inclusive or humanistic model of coexistence. In sharp contrast, Edward's friendship and musical collaboration with Daniel Barenboim in founding the West Eastern Divan Orchestra offers a very modest, but offers a model of hope predicated on the building of community by crossing cultural boundaries. He articulated this inclusive vision many times. In 1993, he addressed a memo to the Palestine National Council meeting in which he said that the world must see that the Palestinian idea is an idea of living together, of respect for others, of mutual recognition between Palestinian and Israeli. Arab nationalists and some radicals accused him of frittering away Palestinian rights by making unwarranted concessions to Zionism. According to them, Saeed's key failure is in defining the conflict between two peoples instead of a class struggle against Zionism and imperialism. Saeed's failings are deemed as a function of his bourgeois humanistic approach, which makes him distrustful of armed struggle. And hence, he's seen as favoring a political solution. To all these things, I think Saeed would plead guilty. But it is precisely the idea of mutual recognition between two peoples that first led Saeed to advocate a two-state solution as early as the late 1970s and before the publication of his Question of Palestine. Despite criticisms from Arafat's entourage, in 1988, formally, the Palestinian National Council adopted the two-state formula, and indeed, Saeed proved he was way ahead of the curve, but his position did not remain static. After the 1982 Israeli invasion of Lebanon and its devastating human consequences, Saeed teamed up with Jean Maure, a Swiss photographer, to produce After the Last Sky, Palestinian Lives. To my mind, probably his most creative work. And it is interesting that we used some of these photographs when I worked in the UN, in the International Conference on the Question of Palestine. Jean Maure put up an exhibit in the Palais des Nations, but the UN in its wisdom decided that all of his captions had to be removed so as not to be controversial. So the Palestinians went unrepresented. They existed in a timeless space. After the first Intifada and the lead-up to the first Gulf War in 91, Edward was concerned that the Palestinian rights might be frittered away. In this connection, in September 91, he asked me to help him organize a meeting that he convened in London. He invited a select number of Palestinians from the occupied territories, namely the who's who of people affiliated with the first Intifada, and a few people that Arafat insisted they attend, and members of the Palestinian diaspora, to think together of what to do. After all, there was a pending invitation to go to the Madrid Peace Conference, which was held later in October. The attendees urged the PLO to participate in the Madrid Conference, but with certain provisos. The Palestinian leadership embraced the yes and eschewed the provisos. Just before the meeting, Edward had visited South Africa. On the plane ride from South Africa, he sat next to the African National Congress representative, ambassador to Great Britain. He was invited to address the gathering. Not all in the meeting that I'm referring to particularly understood or appreciated Edward's reasoning. Part of nationalism is you tend to be rather narrowly conceived in the way you look at things. Edward wanted to convey, however, a very simple message. The Palestinian movement was at a critical crossroads. It had no military option, but it still needed to conduct a wise but militant struggle. Such a struggle would require the mobilization not only of Palestinians, but of international public opinion. Towards the ANC representative informed us about the internationally organized anti-apartheid campaign. The purpose of the campaign was to create an international moral climate to force a political showdown with the apartheid system. The message was clear. PLO participation in Madrid should be accompanied by the launching of the Palestinian equivalent of the anti-apartheid campaign. Israeli occupation must end. The opposite happened. It actually marks the beginning of the depoliticization of both the Palestinian diaspora and elsewhere. For diplomacy to yield results, more politics and grassroots mobilization on the home front and internationally were needed. It is during the break of this proceeding that Edward heard the news that was to affect him the remainder of his life. From my hotel room, he called his wife, he discovered he has leukemia, and when we resumed the meeting, he was a bit preoccupied and resigned, needless to say. Edward was shaken, indeed. But then he said, look, we have to press on. And he kept pressing on. I've got a lot to write and say, he would say. This is precisely what I think he did. Now, Saeed's importance in the question of Palestine was reflected in the eulogy that Mahmoud Darwish offered. He said, Edward placed Palestine in the world's heart and the world in the heart of Palestine. But Palestine, place, people, idea, is, to state the obvious, controversial, and in particular in the U.S. For years, Saeed was seen in the U.S. media to be Arafat's man, the cover of New York Magazine, or the voice of Palestine, or more ungently, the professor of terror by that low-rate professor from the University of Washington. But from the signing of the 1993 Oslo Agreement between Israel and PLO, Saeed unleashed a systematic critique of the PLO leadership through articles in various international outlets that were accumulated into at least 4 books. He considered that the PLO, in acquiescing to a bad peace, had now joined the other side and was talking about the obliteration of the past. He argues that the idea of a collective memory was rapidly becoming disallowed even by Palestinians. This was simply unacceptable to him. He called upon Arafat to resign. Why did Saeed turn against Arafat? And why were Arafat's former enemies, Israelis and Americans, annoyed with Edward Said? There are many reasons for that. I have a whole long section about his prescience about Oslo, but let me summarize it through peculiar kind of denouement. Saeed produced a book of conversations between him and Daniel Barenboim called Parallels and Paradoxes, conversation between music and literature. So Daniel Barenboim, in the midst of a discussion, has nothing to do with Oslo. He was actually talking about Beethoven, Wagner, Debussy. Barenboim notes that there must be an innate relationship between content and the time it takes. Then he suddenly turns to Oslo and notes, I was hopeful it would work. Saeed was not. I wrote an editorial myself even before the declaration saying why I don't think it will work. But the main reason for me, Barenboim continues, that it did not work is because the momentum, in other words, the speed, the tempo of the process did not go hand in hand with the content. It is like playing music, where the content requires a given speed. And if you play it at the wrong speed, much too slow or much too fast, then the whole thing falls apart. This is what happened at Oslo. Well, at least in this case, Daniel Barenboim, his words should put all political pundits to shame. Unlike us, he's both elegant and musically to the point. So, as I pointed out, I too was less than enthusiastic about Oslo. And I have followed the events subsequent to that. Nothing has changed my mind. In his last few years, Edward penned several essays and lectures on late style that have been posthumously published. But for him, lateness is being at the end, fully conscious, full of memory, and also very aware of the present. Hence, his late utterances are not a retreat from persistent and unresolved contradictions, but a righteous indignation at a disgraceful world. It is with this sense of urgency that Saeed was furious at the Palestinian National Authority during Arafat's reign and after. He lambasted the PLO and the PA for their corruption and ineptitude. He criticized the Arab regimes on the same counts and more. He charged that the PA willingly accepted a new role, native policemen whose task is to quell Palestinian resistance to Israeli occupation. Saeed would have been even more furious to witness how the PA had evolved under Mahmoud Abbas's leadership. His forces are trained by U.S. advisors to help defeat their compatriots from Hamas. He might have used the title of one of his articles, The Clash of Ignorance, to lament the futility of the fighting between Hamas and Fatah. Instead of leading Palestinians in difficult times, the Palestinian national movement imploded in Gaza in the year 2007. Saeed would be calling for the reconstitution of the PLO to represent the entirety of the Palestinian people, including those in the diaspora. In the last years of his life, his ideas evolved further. He went back to his humanistic principle that insists on inclusion rather than exclusion. He reasons that historic Palestine and Israel are ostensibly lost causes. The security and prosperity of Israelis and Palestinians are inseparable. Hence, to remain prisoners of exclusive victim narrative can only lead to further human tragedy and loss of life. Instead, he wants to dislodge the sterile discourse by moving it into a different terrain. He expresses support for a binational state, one that would usher reconciliation based on a discourse of inclusion rather than domination. He asks us to think about how Palestinians and Israelis can live with rather than against each other. But remember, the piece he did that in the New York Times, 90% of it was a critique of Oslo, and less than 10% is devoted to the idea of the binational state. He didn't give it much thought. He didn't develop it as a crucial idea. By turning his attention to alternative formulations, I think Saeed joins earlier thinkers who in the 19th and 20th centuries tried to envision alternatives to dominant ideologies, what, in the words of people like Bernard Lazare and Hannah Arendt, who are dubbed as conscious pariahs. But Saeed, like other proponents of this idea of inclusion, the binational idea, the one-state idea, abstained, and this is the importance, abstained from proposing a political agenda of how to implement this vision or define its final shape. In fact, in a column he published in Al-Ahram Weekly in the middle of June of 2002, Saeed notes that the vision coming out of Israel today is one of violence and exclusion. But not all Israelis are in this camp, he notes. He goes back to the South Africa context. The ANC, he says, proposed the vision of a multiracial society from which neither individuals or groups of leaders were deflected. Then he concludes, it is up to us to project the idea of coexistence in two states that have mutual relations with each other on the basis of sovereignty and equality. Those who advocate a one-state solution should not count Saeed as their mentor, but rather Saeed as the humanist who dabbles with ideas of inclusion without giving them programmatic agency and politics. At heart, he remains a democratic humanist, who insists that we must incorporate, emancipate, and enlighten. In the last few lines of his Humanism and Democratic Criticism, Saeed offers the following words. I conclude with the thought that the intellectual's provisional home is the domain of an exigent, resistant, intransigent art into which, alas, one can neither retreat nor search for solutions, but only in that precious exilic realm can one truly grasp the difficulty of what cannot be grasped and then go forth and try anyway.
That's it for us today. In the meantime, whisper, talk, or scream, but do not remain silent. Have a great day. Until next time, take good care of our world and ourselves. Thank you, WZBC Truth and Justice Radio. My email address, selma.abuayash@gmail.com. Send me your comments and feedback or questions on how to find any of the news I shared with you today. And again, in 4 weeks, I will be doing more on Edward's site. Thank you.